and I'm going to have a talk with Archimedes." The drone sat on the ground in front of Archimedes, looking very much like a rock. Archimedes slowly turned a flint core over in his hands, pretending to examine it. Anyone observing him would assume he was working on his flint.
"I think you're right, Bob," Archimedes said in a low voice. "Things seem to be the most tense when everyone is home. When hunters are out, it's more peaceful."
"Not a surprise, Archimedes. We've known for a long time that animals can be more stressed when things get crowded, even animals that like to live in groups."
"So what do we do? Kick a bunch of people out of the village?"
I laughed. "Archimedes, let me introduce you to something called marketing. You don't tell them they have to do it. You convince them that they want to do it, and that you don't want them to. Works especially well with teenagers." Archimedes looked thoughtful for a few seconds, then smiled back.
"I think I see where you're going. So how do we do this?"
I thought for a moment. "Okay, here's what we need to do. Reverse psychology," I said. The translation routine rendered that as backwards trickery, and Archimedes looked confused. I sighed and tried again. "Okay, here's a story from my home. A great leader wanted to introduce potatoes to his people because they were a good thing to grow. He made announcements, he visited villages, but no one was interested or wanted to change. So he grew some himself and passed a law that potatoes were just for leaders, and villagers weren't allowed to eat them. Within a couple of hands of days, all his potatoes had been stolen, and people were growing them." I watched Archimedes, trying to guess if he'd got the point. Archimedes frowned.
"Wait, they grew the tubers? Like, told the plants where to grow? Why not just go out and pick them?"
I sighed, a very human expression, but one that Archimedes had grown to understand. He grinned at my frustration. "We've talked about farming, Archimedes. You can grow a lot of something in a small space if you're organized about it. But the point," I glared at him, but of course he couldn't see that, "is that he got people to do something by telling them that they couldn't." "Maybe your people aren't stubborn that way," Archimedes interrupted me with a laugh.
"Yeah, we are. Do you remember Buster when he was young?"
We shared a chuckle over the memories. Headstrong didn't begin to cover it.
"Okay, Bob, I get it. So we just tell the gangs they can't go to a new village."
No, that won't really do it. We don't tell them anything at all. We start talking among ourselves about repopulating the other village sites and doing it before the gangs get the same idea. And we talk loudly and we do it where they might overhear. I paused to let him consider what I was saying. "Get some of the council involved. Make it seem credible. Really, just pretend we're actually thinking about something like that and start making plans."
"And this will work?"
Archimedes shook his head.
"I really wonder about your people."
"Want to place a bet?" Archimedes grinned and shook his head. 42. Business. Howard, March 2193, Vulcan. The Enniscorthy Distillery Company was doing well. I looked over the spreadsheet. We were just barely keeping up with orders, and we insisted on COD, so no receivables issues. After some discussion, we decided we needed a planet-bound distillery, and we brought Stefan in to set that up. Bridget slapped the cover closed on her tablet, then set it on the desk. She worked her shoulder and spine a few times before leaning back in the chair. Stefan frowned in her direction.
"Backache again? You should see the doctor."
Bridget answered with a noncommittal smile, then looked towards my image on the phone.
"I guess you don't get backaches, right?"
"Not unless I want to. We Bobs try to keep things as realistic as possible most of the time, though. I don't need to let my muscles go stiff, but stretching them out feels good." She nodded, staring into space.
"You're effectively immortal, aren't you?" How old are you, personally, Howard?
Well, I've only existed for 8 years subjective time as Howard, but my memories go back to original Bob's earliest memories as a child, maybe around 2 years old. So I remember around 29 years as original Bob, then 4 years as Bob 1 before he built his first set of clones, 4 years as Riker, 15 years as Charles, who was one of Riker's first clones, and 8 years since Charles cloned me. That's subjective time, as I said. There's a lot of relativistic time dilation in there, so I've experienced 60 years of life. She made a face at me.
That sounds complicated. Do you share thoughts?
With the other Bobs? No. When a Bob is cloned, he wakes up with the same memories as his parent at the moment the backup was made. After that, though, we each go our own way.
Wow. I'm not sure I could handle that. Life is complicated enough.
Well, what about as an afterlife? I smiled at her. Original Bob had to die first before he became a replicant. Not much future in death, I'm told.
On the other hand, your relatives stop calling.
We do have one non-Bob, you know. Henry Roberts is the Australian probe replicant. She made a moo of something, maybe disapproval.
Yeah, word is, he's not fully bolted down.
Well, Henry had some issues with sensory deprivation early on. We know how to handle it now. Any new replicants would probably be fine. I looked at her sideways. You thinking of applying?
No, just curious.
Stefan added, one eyebrow arched.
Immortality sounds good, though.
43. An exchange of words. Riker, March 2178, Sol. Hello, Mr. Vickers. The man at the other end of the call looked briefly surprised, but recovered quickly.
Well, I'm impressed. There was some question about whether you'd ever manage to figure things out. I guess it was too much to hope for that you'd just destroy each other instead.
I smiled at him, the kind of smile a cat shows to a bird, just teeth. Uh-huh. You've been a busy little beaver. We've determined that the attacks on Brazil were also your work. I assume the idea was to try to foment another war, maybe knock off a few more people, so those deaths are also on you. Vickers waved a hand dismissively.
They had the chance to go voluntarily. It's our duty to help them along. I don't expect you to understand.
I doubt if you even care if anyone understands. My guess is your announcements are more about ego than any desire to help or inform. Vickers grinned at me.
Already descending to personal insults. I expected a little bit more from you.
You flatter yourself. This isn't a duel of words. You aren't important enough. I'm satisfying my curiosity. Nothing more. I carefully kept my face neutral. I didn't want to give this guy any satisfaction. And on that subject, this whole vehement thing seems more like a vehicle for you than a cause. People like you aren't joiners unless you think the organization can benefit you. So, what's your ultimate goal? A flash of anger crossed Vickers' face.
If you must know, replicant, I'm your maker. I invented the replicant systems that you inhabit. The systems that Faith stole without so much as a nod. You don't deserve to exist. You shouldn't be alive. Vehement is a suitable tool for achieving that goal.
I doubt that the members of Vehement will feel good about finding out they've been used.
Don't be naive, replicant. They know I have my own motivations. They use me, I use them. Everyone gets what they want.
And what does Ambassador Gerald get out of it?
Gerald was working with me on the replicant systems in Australia. When you stole that from me, you stole from him. He was a little more interested in the fiduciary rewards, typical small mind, but his hate is useful.
I nodded. I had about everything I needed, except the one last item. Permission. Homer committed suicide, you know. Couldn't live with what you'd made him do.
Good. It's more than he and all of you deserve.
Permission received. And the people you killed in Brazil and elsewhere, do you care about them?
I think I've already answered that question. Is there anything else that you wanted to say that might actually interest me before I continue the task of ending your existence? You can't stop me, you know. You're simply not good enough.
Vickers gave me a condescending smile. Well, before I called you, I stenciled your name on a ship, Buster. It should be there in about 20 seconds. Let's see if that's good enough. Vickers shook his head, the smile never wavering.
And you'll have missed. You'll take out Vehement Headquarters, but not me.
I cocked my head sideways. Oh, you misunderstand. There's a Buster heading there, too, but the one I'm talking about is coming in on your position, 55 kilometers north and 2 kilometers east of the Vehement base. Little red farmhouse, to all outside appearances. The smile left Vickers' face. His eyes went wide and he turned towards the window that had allowed the drones to verify his actual location. Nobody thinks of everything. If you have some variation on a god, asshole, you might want to have a very quick conversation with him. And fuck you to hell. Vickers leaped from his chair just as the Buster arrived. 1,000 pounds of high tensile steel impacted the ground at planetary escape velocity. It wouldn't quite match the Barringer crater, but it was good enough for pest control. The video cut off as the entire area was vaporized. At the same moment, another impact 50-odd kilometers south created a matching crater. New Zealand would have a couple of new lakes by and by. From a window off to the side, Bill began a slow clap, echoed by Charles and Ralph.
After all your talk, you're not above pummeling the Earth when it's convenient.
Gerald glared out of the video window at me. I had preempted today's UN session to announce the effective end of Vehement. I couldn't decide if Gerald was trying to bluff his way through this or if he thought his connection with Vehement was still unknown. In any case, I wasn't in the mood. I stood up, placed my hands on my desk, and leaned into the camera. As I opened my mouth to speak, I realized I was too enraged to even form words. At that moment, if I'd had a shipbuster in position, Gerald would have died. I frame-jacked slightly and took a few deep breaths. Just barely in control, I glared at him. Listen, you putrid, self-inflated bag of air. A good friend of mine is dead, driven to suicide by your friend and former co-worker with your full knowledge and cooperation. People in Brazil are dead for no other reason than to fulfill his sick political goals and to allay your butthurt. Again, with your knowledge and approval. And most of the rest of humanity is on starvation rations at the moment. So I am not in the mood to put up with your hypocritical yammering, and the only question right now is whether I let your own countrymen impeach and hopefully lynch you, or whether I come and get you myself, take you upstairs, and push you out an airlock. Why don't you mouth me off just one more time, you festering pile of crap? Go ahead. Just one more word. I glared out the video window at him. In the entire UN gathering, there was not so much as a cough. I held the moment for another heartbeat, then sneered at him. If you show up tomorrow, I'm going with Plan B. I'm just saying. With a flourish, I cut the connection. Charles grinned at me.
Say, you're kind of scary when you get riled.
I was too upset to smile back, but I did give him a shrug. That's for Homer. 44. Baseball. Bill, March 21, 89, Epsilon Eridani. Hey, batter, batter. Hey, batter, batter. Howard grinned at the outfield. Has that ever worked? Bob yelled back. It's traditional. Just go with it. I sailed a perfect underhand toss across the plate. Howard swung and totally whiffed. That's three. Everyone advance. Howard shrugged, materialized a glove, and jogged to the outfield. We were generally able to field a pretty full scrub game these days, but we couldn't depend on enough people for two teams. Original Bob had never been much of a team player anyway. We all preferred scrub. More of a personal goals thing. Some of us could even hit the ball. I moved to the catcher position and Loki took over as pitcher. Everyone else shuffled forward into the next position. As soon as we were all ready, Marvin came up to bat. Loki wound up and threw the ball right over the plate. About 10 feet over the plate. There were boos from the outfield. I stood up. Yeah, you've been practicing my ass. That's with practice? At least it's going in the right direction now. Uh-huh. In the interest of not walking every batter for the next half hour, I'm going to allow some guppy intervention. Put it across at people height, okay? I nodded to Marvin. On the next pitch, Marvin knocked it into the outfield between center and right. Howard and Dopey looked at each other, each waiting for the other to move. Marvin, no dummy, was closing in on second before the two stooges decided who should make an effort. By the time they had the ball into the infield, Marvin was at third. He took a moment to grin and thumb his nose. We were all fairly evenly matched in sports prowess, for obvious reasons. It came down to who was paying attention and who was letting their mind drift. We played for a subjective half hour, the agreed-upon duration, then retired to the pub. The pub was hosted in the same matrix that handled Bob Moots, so it had more than enough processor power to handle all the Bobs and all the beer. And Hungry's coffee, of course. As always, we ended up talking shop. I had a group encircling me that wanted to talk about Bullwinkle. Bullwinkle? Really? Hey, why not? I grinned at Thor. The thing needed an external antenna array because of the required bandwidth. I just played with the aesthetics a bit. You've seen the pictures? Howard chuckled. It would be hard not to think of a moose. I think your sense of proportion was a little off when you built that thing. There were answering laughs from several people, plus some perplexed expressions from those who hadn't seen the pictures. So what's the long game, Bill? I shrugged. Nothing dramatic, Mario. It's an interesting project and could be useful. It would give us a physical presence, Howard interjected. I remember Riker being frustrated sometimes working with the Enclaves, and it's even more so for me. We have all this interaction with the Ephemerals. Please don't use that word, Howard. I gave him the stink eye, and he looked embarrassed for a moment. It's not intended to be derogatory, Bill. It's just... Then just say humans. Sure, it's not derogatory, but it is dismissive, and it will eventually shape an attitude that their lives matter less. Howard gave me a blank look, then shrugged. Anyway, the point is that I could be so much more effective if I could, you know, walk among them. Flying around looking like a giant pill bug and giving orders through a speaker is just incredibly limiting. Politicians did it for centuries, someone muttered. I grinned and said, that's pill, not pill bug. There are even better words. Anatomical. Scatological. I glared around the group. If you guys break out into Gilbert and Sullivan, I'm leaving. We all laughed and the tension was broken. But I was still left with a weird twinge of foreboding. Eventually the moose groupies broke up and joined different conversations. I wandered around the pub listening in, but not engaging. Topics ranged from the impending arrival of the latest colony ships to Omicron Squared Eridani, the chances of a colony being successful on Clown Car Planet, wildlife on Vulcan, speculation on the Others, and my asteroid mover project. I moved in to listen on the last item. Mario stopped what he was saying and turned to me. Bill, we were just wondering about the capacity of the mover plates. How big can you go? I grinned at him. This was one of my favorite subjects. Right now, we could probably apply a vector to something about half the size of Ceres, so about 500 kilometers in diameter. But it would be a tiny, tiny vector in the range of a hundredth of a G. I thought for a moment. How big can we go? Well, you keep adding plates to get more push, but that makes control of plate interactions more complex. It's just an engineering problem, though. We're learning how to tune the drive so that most of the energy goes into moving the payload instead of keeping the plates in position. There's no theoretical maximum that I've been able to find. So we could eventually move stars? Mario grinned at me, obviously trolling. I laughed. Sure, in a million years or so. Theoretically possible doesn't mean easy. I nodded to the group and moved on. Another group was discussing the expanding bubble of the Bobiverse. In principle, we should be approaching a 40-light-year radius by now, but reproduction tended to be uneven and spotty. It was generally accepted that we Bobs were only marginally enthusiastic about cloning more of ourselves. I shrugged. The others might change that. The mood continued for many objective minutes, hours in our time sense. Eventually, though, Bobs started to pay their respects and pop out. It had been a good game. Okay, not really, but a good post-game wrap-up. I smiled to myself. That was really the point. I have something to show you. Garfield was trying and mostly failing to keep a huge grin off his face. Well, okay, not bad news then. All right, Gar, I'll bite. What you got? I'll give you my answer to Bullwinkle. With a flourish, he popped up a video window. Rocky? That does not look like Rocky, more like Rodan. Hey, if we're going to get pedantic, Garfield said, laughing. The real Bullwinkle was bipedal. If we're going to get pedantic, the real Bullwinkle was a cartoon. So, does it fly? In theory. The android stood in the hold of a cargo drone, still attached to its support cradle. Metadata told me that the drone was parked on the surface of Ragnarok. Garfield opened the cargo bay door, revealing the bare rock of the planet's surface. His avatar froze as he switched his consciousness to the android. Another window popped up, showing Rocky's viewpoint. Rocky detached itself from the cradle and waddled to the door and out into the Ragnarok wilderness. The communications relay drone stayed with it and provided another viewpoint. The android was not graceful on foot, not really surprising. The still relatively thin air of Ragnarok would require a lot of wing surface in order to lift off, even with the powerful artificial musculature. But walking wasn't the point. Garfield set himself, opened his massive wings, and launched. Several powerful flaps were sufficient to get off the ground, and he steadily gained altitude. The comms drone kept pace, keeping Rocky centered in the frame. The other window showed the view from Rocky's eyes. Honestly, it wasn't impressive from any objective metric. Drones could fly faster, higher, with less energy, and were more maneuverable. But based on my experience with Bullwinkle, Garfield would be experiencing something entirely different from flying a drone. Things went well for the first 2 minutes. Then Garfield ran into some turbulence. Maybe a crosswind, maybe a downdraft, who knew? But Rocky went into a roll that approached 90 degrees. He attempted to correct and rolled farther in the opposite direction. The motion kept reinforcing itself, and every attempt by Garfield to get it under control either made it worse or introduced pitch and yaw. Finally, Garfield folded his wings and went into free fall. This stopped the harmonic cycle, but he was now rapidly losing altitude. Maybe time to start flying again, buddy. I blushed as soon as the words left my mouth. Nothing like stating the obvious to help out. Thanks, Bill. I might just try that. Garfield was taking my foot-and-mouth moment with good grace. I resolved to try shutting the hell up as a strategy. Garfield stuck out his wings just the smallest amount, trying to establish stability. It seemed to be working for a few moments. Then the rushing air snapped his wings out like a parachute opening up. Every status light went red, and Garfield screamed. I pulled back to VR to find Garfield sitting hunched forward, hugging himself, a wild look in his eyes. He took a few deep breaths, then glared at me. I guess we did too good of a job setting up the neural feedback. That hurt. I nodded. In theory, that's what we want, but maybe we should put a limiter on it. Yeah, let's do that. Garfield stood and stretched carefully. Where's Rocky? Still on his way down. Wings are snapped, though, as is his keel. I don't think you want to be in there for the landing. I pulled up the video feed from the trailing drone, which was still faithfully following the tumbling android. Rocky was definitely junk, and Garfield hadn't thought to add a parachute. I looked at Garfield, and he shrugged. Well, it's not the fall that kills you, he said with a rueful half-smile on his face. We watched as Rocky hit the ground. Every status indicator went dead, and the trailing drone picked up the loud, hollow thump of impact. I instructed the cargo drone to head for the impact site and pick up the pieces. I turned to Garfield. So, other than the unfortunate ending, how did it feel?
Incredible. I was flying. Actually flying, not just working a control panel. I think hang gliding might come close, but nothing else. I smiled at him. I could understand the feeling. It's a lot more real than VR.
Yeah.
And what we've got here will allow Bobs to interact with the real world. As beings, I mean, not as floating cameras.
You're right, Garfield.
In an emergency, I think we could even use them with the comms drone hanging around, although that's messy. Garfield gazed into space for a few moments.
I wonder if we're missing the big picture.
Take this to its logical conclusion, and we could replace our heaven hulls with bodies.
Like mechanical versions of Van Vogt's Silkies? That was a mind-boggling thought.
Yeah, like that, Bill. We may be the beginning of a new species. Homo sidereus.
The to-do just keeps getting longer and longer. Let's see if we can get rid of the trailing communication drone first, okay?
Garfield smiled and shrugged.
So you know what comes now, right?
What? He grinned and held the beat.
Rocky II, I hate you.
45. Replication. Howard, August 2193, Vulcan.
You want what?
Riker frowned and leaned back in surprise. I waited for him to finish overacting.
Any information on creating a replicant? We have the replicant hardware and all, but we're a little light on the part where you start with a body and end up with a recording.
Why the fleeming hell would you want that?
I shrugged. No particular reason. I just think it's a gap in our knowledge base. If we wanted to create a new replicant, right now we couldn't. Basically, we're it.
Riker gave me the hairy eyeball, and a caption flashed below him, at waist height. Not sure if joking or serious.
I laughed. Will rarely attempted a joke, especially since Homer. But when he did, it was always funny.
What's really going on, Howard?
It's nothing, really, Will.
I'm not imminently intending to replicate someone, if that's what you're thinking. It's just that we only have the one generation of humans to get the information from. After that, we'd be reduced to reverse engineering, with all the failures and false starts that implies.
It has nothing to do with Dr. Sheehy at all?
I kept my face deadpan.
Not particularly. It would seem there was no privacy at all in Bobtown. Anyway, we were just friends.
We're just friends.
Will looked at me, unmoving for a few more milliseconds, then nodded his head and looked away.
Okay, Howard. I'll bring it up with the appropriate people at this end. I take it you've talked to Cranston already about any info that Faith might still have on the process?
Yeah. He, of course, wanted a crap ton of concessions in return before I'd even find out if he had anything worthwhile.
Well, hell, Will grinned at me. Why didn't you say so? Doing an end run around Cranston is all the motivation I need.
He finished his coffee, gave me a nod, and vanished.
I figured that would work. Just needed to not sell it too hard, or he would have gotten suspicious.
I pulled up the medical report that I'd intercepted, labeled B. Sheehy. I examined the scan for the 100th time, hoping maybe this time it would be different.
Cranston's face glowed a most unhealthy shade of red in the video window. I tried not to smile.
Damn it! Your product is now showing up in our territory. I've told you we're not interested. I've forbade you from selling your devil's brew here. I want it stopped.
He was mad, cursing and everything.
Excellent.
Minister Cranston, oh, it's President Cranston now, isn't it? Anyway, sir, I am not selling or even offering any of my alcohol-themed products in New Jerusalem. However, your attempt at controlling the supply has likely driven the price up high enough that it's being brought in from Spitsbergen by unorthodox methods.
I have to admit their consumption does seem rather high.
Then put a stop to it.
Absolutely, sir. I'll put a line on the label, not for resale in New Jerusalem. That should do it. After all, smugglers and bootleggers are always law-abiding.
Amazing. I wouldn't have thought it possible for his face to get redder. Live and learn. But he wasn't finished, apparently.
And I will lodge an official protest at the idea of you using the colony equipment to engage in private enterprise. You are profiteering off of our backs.
I shook my head in amazement. First, I made all of those donuts and gave them to the colonies free of charge. Second, I'm not using one of those donuts. I made my own. And third, not that it's actually relevant, but we're gradually moving production planetside. Once that's done, I'll add the donut to the colony inventory.
Tread carefully, replicant. You might find access to your families restricted.
That was not an unexpected tactic, but it didn't make it any easier to take. I had my response ready.
Mr. President, you signed an agreement before we shipped you here that established certain inalienable rights for your citizens. You also entered into a personal agreement with Riker concerning specifics of our family. Start reneging on that, and this will escalate quickly.
We spent several seconds in a stare-off before Cranston broke eye contact.
Very well. We will pursue the border options for now. However, this is not over.
He reached out a frame and broke connection.
Wow.
I turned to the video window showing Riker's image.
Wow indeed, Will. Should we be setting up an escape plan for the family?
As one alternative. Will stared into space for a few moments. Another would be just to remove the irritant. My eyebrows rose.
The whiskey?
No, you twit. Cranston.
Now that was a plan I could get behind.
46. Clown Car Planet. Rudy. February 2190, Epsilon Indy. I did a test ping to Riker to check my tau. I'd been doing this regularly for the last couple of days, waiting for it to drop to the point where I could maintain a VR connection. We'd been exchanging emails for a few weeks, but a tradition of sorts had developed where the moment when a traveling Bob could maintain a VR session with a stationary Bob was considered arrival. It was more significant than actual entry into the system. I received a response, then Riker popped into VR.
Hey, Rudy, good to hear from you. Where's Edwin?
Still not slowed down enough. I moved ahead so I could get a look at KKP. I'll be there in about 8 days, and Exodus 6 will be another week.
Riker nodded. Call me back when you've had a close look at KKP.
The planet itself wasn't particularly memorable. It had oceans, it had land. The day and night cycles, though, had imposed a certain chaos on the evolution of life. Based on Linus's notes and what I could see from quick drone flyabouts, the planet had gone through something equivalent to the Cambrian explosion, then kept every single branch. Both plants and animals came in a huge number of phyla. At first glance, it could appear to a non-scientist as if every individual plant and animal was its own species. Linus had theorized that the weird light cycles created a large number of niches and opportunities for competition. This included several different versions of photosynthesis optimized for different parts of the spectrum, which resulted in what I suspected was the real reason for the name. The planet had more colors than a patchwork quilt. Even the oceans came in different hues due to the different breeds of plankton. Between the sun's path through the sky over the course of the year and the extra heat and light supplied by the Jovian primary, days, nights, and even seasons would be hard to differentiate. I chuckled, perusing the notes. Linus had tentatively named the Jovian Big Top. I doubted either name would survive the colony's first general meeting, honestly, but it was fun while it lasted. As had become habit with the Bobs, Linus had left some mining drones and an auto factory behind to process raw ore from asteroids into refined metals, and left them in orbit with a beacon attached. Epsilon Indy wasn't a rich system, but the automation had still managed to accumulate several hundred thousand tons of material. It would be a good start. I pinged Edwin. I received an invitation and popped into his VR.
Hi, Rudy.
Edwin. I sat down and accepted a coffee from Jeeves.
Edwin's VR was, in my opinion, one of the better ones. He'd created a living area with huge windows on one wall
that looked out on whatever view was really available outside his vessel. That would have been a little boring during the trip, but now it showed Big Top as he approached orbital insertion. Edwin was still several million miles away, but this was a Jovian planet. It already dominated the sky.
"So, what do we have?"
he asked. "This planet is like that Harrison novel," I answered. "What was it? Oh, yeah, Death World, where everything was deadly."
"That bad?"
I waved a hand. "Possibly I exaggerate, but the ecosystem is very, very competitive. I know they are making do with a fence on Vulcan, but for here, I'm leaning more towards domes. Not for atmosphere, but to keep out the ickies." Edwin laughed.
"Yeah, there's a technical term for you. Ickies."
"No, it's actually a species name," I smirked in response. "Blame Linus. Ickies are a kind of flying leech with multiple suckers. I think the name is appropriate." Edwin started to look a little green.
"Oh, lovely.
I might just start a betting pool on whether the colonists take one look around and start screaming at me to take them back."
"Hmm.
But, you know, according to Howard, the Cupid bug is well on the way to being eradicated. Maybe a drone specifically designed as an icky killer will do the trick."
"Jeez."
Edwin pinched the bridge of his nose. "On the plus side, once I unload, I get to go back to Earth." He looked up at me and grinned.
"You? Not so much."
I responded with one finger. 47. New Village. Bob, September 2182, Delta Eridani. The Deltan Council, including Archimedes and Arnold, watched as almost 100 Deltan adolescents marched away from camp, yelling insults and challenges at the onlookers. The Council members did a creditable job of maintaining straight faces, some even managing to look upset. When the tail end of the parade disappeared into the bush, Arnold slapped Archimedes on the back and said,
"That was great."
He then leaned in close and said, in a low voice that only Archimedes and the spy drone could hear,
"I'm sure Bob had a hand in it."
Archimedes' eyes got wide and he looked very concerned, but Arnold just shook his head and said,
"I don't need to know. I'm just glad it worked."
Other council members gave Archimedes a nod or a smile as they dispersed. Marvin and I looked at each other, then began laughing. The worst troublemakers in Camelot, completely convinced that it was their idea, had just marched off to one of the old abandoned village sites to repopulate it, and Archimedes was getting the credit for thinking up and masterminding the plot. Reverse psychology, not just for humans. Marvin lost his smile and got a worried expression. "Of course, it fixes the immediate problem, but everything we do seems to have side effects down the road. What if they go to war with Camelot in a few years?"
"Don't borrow trouble, Marv," I sighed and sat back. "Sure as hell something will hit the fan, but let's worry about it when it happens."
But he was probably right. 48. Operation. Howard, September 2193, Vulcan. I texted Stefan for the third time in the last hour. I couldn't call him anymore as he'd blocked voice calls from me after my last attempt. His reply came back within a minute.
"Still in surgery. Calm down. Aren't you supposed to be a computer?"
Okay, that stung. Well, not really, but point taken. I took a deep breath and attempted to relax. Bridget's surgery was already running overtime. There was no scenario in which that was a good thing. I tried distracting myself with a few of the many projects I had on the go, but I couldn't maintain concentration. In desperation, I checked in on Bill. Guppy indicated that he was running Bullwinkle, so wouldn't be responding except in an emergency. I doubted that me freaking out really qualified, so I didn't bother leaving a message. I had a quick peek at his terraforming blog, but there was nothing new. I was seriously considering just frame-jacking down when Stefan called me.
"Aye, Howard. You can stop with the worrying now. She's out of surgery, and the doctors say it looks positive. The tumor was a little more spread than they expected, so it took longer to excise, but all good."
I thanked Stefan, traded some meaningless comments, then hung up. I sat back.
took several deep breaths until I thought that I had it under control. And without so much as a by the way, I leaned forward and started to sob. Just friends. There had been a lot of improvements in medicine since the days of original Bob, but some things hadn't changed all that much. Cancer could be nipped in the bud if caught early, but there was no vaccination yet, and the knife was still often the only effective treatment. This was unacceptable. What the hell had they been doing for 100 years? I resolved to look into it when I had a chance. Meanwhile, Stefan sat at her bedside. He dialed me in through the room phone. While I waited, I sent a quick email to Bill to hurry the hell up with the androids. I knew it wouldn't help, but it was action of a sort. Stefan and I traded an occasional desultory comment, but neither of us was in the mood for more. Finally, he turned to me.
I'm going to stretch and refuel. Some of us still have to eat. I'll tell them not to come in and hang up the phone on you.
With a nod, he got up, leaving me to watch over Bridget. If you've ever watched someone come out of anesthesia, it's not like waking up. That can be sexy under the right circumstances. Bridget looked more like a drowned rat that had just been given CPR. I made a note to myself to keep that observation private. She finally opened one eye, looked around, and spotted me peering at her from the phone. She squinted, grimaced at me, and said,
"Jeez, what do I need to do to get a day off?"
I laughed. Then I had to override the video image to keep from embarrassing myself.
My image froze for a couple of milliseconds, not nearly long enough for her to notice.
When I'd recovered control, I grinned at her. "Not to worry. Sales are good. This year you can take Christmas off and even use up some extra coal." I was considering what I would say next when Stefan walked back in, coffee in hand. Bridget's face lit up, and Stefan smiled when he saw she was awake. He exclaimed, "Maminette!" and pulled up a chair as close to the bed as he could manage. He took her hand, and I ceased to exist for any practical purpose. How did I miss this? We made small talk. I don't remember it. I'm sure I could play back my logs, but why? I made my excuses as soon as I could without appearing to be acting odd, then retreated to my VR. Right. Well, what did I expect? Bridget was a human. An ephemeral. Her plans would include a home, a family, a place in society. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that I'd been very carefully avoiding thinking about certain issues. And one of the issues that had just come into focus was that I was an outsider. I saw the world through video calls and chat windows and drone cameras. I really shouldn't have been surprised that something could develop right under my nose. I materialized a bucket and kicked it as hard as I could. Strangely, it helped. 49. Arrival. Mulder, March 2195. Poseidon, Eta Cassiopeiae. Poseidon, good name. Marcus shook his head in mock amazement, then took a sip of his Coke. I've had a look at your summary and notes. Pretty cool. I really want to see a kraken. I smiled in response. You won't be disappointed, I promise. Anyway, right now, I'm just settling into a polar orbit. Monty is about a week away and should be down to VR Tau by now. I'll ping him. Marcus settled more comfortably into his seat and sipped thoughtfully on his straw. For some reason, Marcus had never taken to coffee. He preferred his virtual caffeine in carbonated form. Well, whatever. At that moment, Monty popped in and materialized another chair for himself. He accepted a coffee from Jeeves and looked around. My VR wasn't particularly inspired, as such things go. I'd never felt the need to come up with something new and imaginative. I had a variation on Bob One's library, but with high windows for more sunlight and more casual furniture. So anyway, things grow big in the water, in direct proportion to the available space. A global ocean 800 kilometers deep makes for some very large nasties. Monty looked concerned. They couldn't take down a mat, could they? Oh, hell no, nothing's that big. But on this planet, a day at the beach is likely to be fatal even if you don't get wet. The Kraken in particular has tentacles, and one of its feeding strategies is to grab animals off the edges of mats.
Right, Monty nodded. Well, the mats are a short-term solution anyway. The colonists will be building floating cities for the long term. We'll just need